This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. Here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
2001, Eskom won the World Utility of the Year Award in New York City for being the most reliable, energy available, and cheapest utility. We are now at the other end of the spectrum. You are so broken.
That was energy analyst Ted Blom, a former senior manager at South African utility Eskom. Details coming up also. Ugandan police have detained opposition leader Robert Chagulani, known as Bobby Wine. Gunmen have staged another brazen kidnapping of students in northwest Nigeria. And Western countries have urged Egypt to end persecution of activists. All these and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. Gunmen have staged another brazen kidnapping of primary school students and teachers in northwestern Nigeria. Kaduna State Security Commissioner Samuel Aruan told the Reuters news agency today that he has received reports of the abductions in the Barnin-Gwari local government area. Officials are clarifying how many people were snatched. Just last week, 39 college students were kidnapped by gunmen in Kaduna State. They remain missing. According to Reuters, attempts by the military and police to deal with a series of kidnappings since December have had little success. Many worry that state authorities are making the situation worse by letting kidnappers go unpunished. The attacks have become a political problem for President Muhammadu Buhari. Musician politician Bobby Wine led opposition lawmakers and supporters in a protest today against the alleged abduction, torture, and murder of his supporters. Security forces briefly arrested them for holding an illegal gathering under COVID-19 restrictions. Police then fired tear gas and warning shots to disperse growing crowds that gathered around the central police station. The Army Anti-Terrorism Unit was quickly deployed as they drove around some city spots with other military officers doing foot patrols. President Yoweri Museveni won another term in office January 14th. Wine claims he was cheated out of victory and his party insists over 600 of their people are missing. Western countries have urged Egypt to end the prosecution of activists, journalists, and perceived political opponents under counterterrorism laws and unconditionally release those who are in jail. The United States joined 30 members of the UN Human Rights Council on Friday in signing the joint statement calling on the Egyptian government to lift curbs on freedoms of expression and assembly. Egypt rejects the criticism and asked its representative to deliver a statement to the Human Rights Council to shed light on human rights violations within those countries that signed the joint statement. The Committee to Protect Journalists says Egypt has imprisoned at least 27 journalists and became the worst jailer of media in the region and third in the world after China and Turkey.
This is by far the worst time to be a journalist in Egypt's modern history. We at the Committee to Protect Journalists have been documented since 2013 when President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi took over. Egypt has consistently been one of the worst jailers of journalists and the worst in the Middle East region. And in many ways represent what the concentrated strategy of Abdel Fattah al-Sisi's government to roll back fear barrier and criminalize legitimate journalism. And at least over the last 5 years, it's been permitted largely by the scant criticism his government has received from U.S. and Western allies.
The report said that Egypt leads the world in jailing journalists on false news charges, and when a journalist is released in Egypt, he or she is not completely free because release conditions and probation conditions make it impossible for journalists to resume work in journalism again. What prompted the Egyptian government to resort to such tactics?
The government have engaged in politically motivated trials, bringing together journalists, activists, academics, holding them without trial for the purpose of punishing them outside the law. These kind of arbitrary detentions makes journalists think twice before daring to question the government line, and the fact that they are released but not free keeps them under the government thumb. Sometimes the probation condition would require journalists like Shawkan, a photojournalist and award-winning photographer, to go every night to spend 12 hours in prison. Or even, again, someone like Mahmoud Hussein, Al Jazeera journalist, who was released after more than 4 years in custody, has to appear twice in front of a police officer as part of his probation. These and other forms of legal threats and bans, including barring from international travel against Madam Asr investigative journalist Hossam Baga, are all constant reminders of journalists never to cross red line and to be subjected to censorship at every turn.
According to the CPJ report, most imprisoned journalists in Egypt are charged but not sentenced. They are detained for months or years awaiting trial on false news and terrorism charges. How would you explain the harsh response to opposing views and opinions in Egypt?
Using vague terrorism and false news charges are in part ways to expand the government censorship strategy to keep President al-Sisi in power without accountability and without much criticism. And in these cases, cruelty is the goal, for journalists to feel helpless, to accept the least possible outcome. And the use of counterterrorism and false news is also accompanied by rhetoric by government officials headed by President Sisi himself, who tried to delegitimize journalists and to describe them as quote-unquote forces of evil to justify the use of excessive emergency and military law to deny them any pretense of rule of law or justice under the law.
Is the Committee to Protect Journalists relaying facts of this report to the Biden administration or at least to the Congressional Caucus for Human Rights in Egypt?
We share our findings worldwide with State Department, with Congress members, European Union, and in many ways, we've heard similar messages about prioritizing human rights and press freedom in Egypt from U.S. officials and policymakers. And what we're hoping is that this rhetoric will be joined by real action. The U.S. can use its leverage with aid and arms sales. It can also with multilateral bodies and working with European allies and with international organization like the UN and the UN Human Rights Council to make sure that these points are also not just part of the U.S.-Egypt relationship as part of any engagement the Egyptian government has with the international community.
Sherif Mansour, MENA Program Coordinator at CPJ, explained the situation to VOA Senior Analyst Mohammed El-Shenawi. That was Sherif Mansour, MENA Program Coordinator at CPJ, speaking with VOA Senior Analyst Mohammed El-Shenawi. Tanzanian authorities have confirmed that President John Magufuli is ill, but are still denying that the COVID-denying leader has a severe case of the virus. Vice President Samia Suluhu said today that Magufuli has just a little flu and fever, and it was time for Tanzanians to hold together. Tanzanian authorities have come under pressure to reveal President John Magufuli's health status after some people, including opposition politicians, claimed the president was sick with coronavirus. Tanzania stopped recording COVID-19 positive cases just a few weeks after announcing its first case in March last year. After months of downplaying the virus's effect, recently the government officials called on the population to take precautions and wear masks. The International Medical Humanitarian Organization Doctors Without Borders, or MSF, says health facilities across Ethiopia's Tigray region have been targeted in a deliberate campaign against medical treatment. Out of 106 health facilities visited by MSF in Tigray from December to March, 70% had been looted and 30% had been damaged. Only 13% were functioning normally. Other facilities have been occupied. MSF says Eritrean soldiers are still using one facility as their base. And because armed groups seized ambulances in the region, MSF says the referral system in Tigray for transporting six patients is almost non-existent. Before the conflict began in November, Tigray had one of the best health systems in Ethiopia. The 63rd annual Grammy Awards were held last night for highlights and a look at how African artists fared. International Edition's Jason Patinkin speaks with Jackson Mfunganye, host of VOA's Upfront Africa and Red Carpet Shows.
Jackson, thank you so much for joining us. How are you doing?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. So starting off, what were some of the highlights of last night's Grammy Awards?
Jason, after a little over a year of virtual awards shows due to the pandemic, the 2021 Grammy Awards were very intentional in providing a hopeful glimpse in, you know, what that post-pandemic world of award shows will most likely look like. You know, there was outdoorsy, fun, socially distanced, but most importantly, COVID-free, at least for 2021. Now, there's hope in the entertainment industry that things will start getting back to, you know, those pre-COVID days very soon. Now, some of the highlights, let's start with Beyoncé, also known as Queen B. She made history. She's now the first female artist with the most Grammys. She won her 28th Grammy yesterday. Rap legend Nas, he won Best Rap Album. His first ever Grammy Award, believe it or not. He was first nominated in 1996. So many highlights. It was such a fun show to watch. A little long, but, you know, these are the times that we live in. The people who won were more diverse this time around than, you know, previously. So, yeah.
And there were some African winners this year. What can you tell us about them? How did the continents do last night?
The continent, the African continent, was very well represented by two Afrobeat heavyweights, both from Nigeria, Burna Boy and Wizkid. Burna Boy won the Best Global Music Album category for his fourth album, Twice as Tall. Now, this is a category that was formerly known as Best World Music Album, you know, as a way of trying to acknowledge this, you know, endless trove of music that lies outside of the mainstream of the United States. Anyways, this is the second year in a row that Burna Boy was nominated. And Wizkid won Best Music Video for his song with Beyoncé, Brown Skin Girl, from the album Lion King, The Gift. That's the soundtrack to the Lion King movie.
And, of course, South African comedian Trevor Noah hosted the event. How'd he do?
He did great. Like I said, he did great. He was phenomenal. You know, the Recording Academy, which puts on these Grammy Awards, has consistently, over the years, faced controversy because of what they say it's lack of diversity, whether it was in its membership, its nominations, and the awards that were given out. And I think that for them, booking Trevor Noah to host the event was probably an attempt to try and reflect this new progressive institution that is taking these criticisms to heart and working to repair their image. And if this was the year of new beginnings, then this was a great start.
new beginnings. I think that's something almost everyone can support this year. Thank you so much for joining us, Jackson.
Thank you, Jason.
That was Jackson Mfungane, host of VOA's Upfront Africa and Red Carpet Shows, speaking with International Edition's Jason Patinkin. Schools started to reopen in Zimbabwe today for some students, though only exam preparation classes are back so far. The government says it has put in place measures to ensure everyone's safety against COVID-19. Reporter Kudzai Zenawashi has the details.
Schools have opened with limited numbers of exam classes. At Frank Johnson Primary School in Harare, traffic was relatively low, as expected. Itai Manda dropped off his son for school and to also check how safe his son would be during learning.
Yes, partly I'm happy. We got sanitized and we got here. And our kids also were sanitized. I'm happy, but I think we might need a bit of temperature check, which we did not see, and maybe to improve on social distancing.
Critics say if an urban school fails to do temperature tests, what can be expected in a rural school? Progressive Teachers Union of Zimbabwe Secretary General Raymond Majongo says government did not consult stakeholders.
Schools are reopening. We have not met government formally to discuss the nitty-gritties of reopening or opening of schools. The serious outstanding issues that have not been addressed, there is nothing that is going to happen going forward without engaging the workers.
Since the lockdown began, the government has shown a keen interest in following the education calendar. The last COVID-19 school closures followed spikes in cases after they had reopened. Some critics say the government did not consult stakeholders then either. Majongo says salaries and health safety have been added to the list.
We have serious issues that we have raised with our employer, and they are not coming forthright with those. We took a position as the collective bodies of the representatives, and that we have issues that must be addressed positively first.
Teachers want a return to the US dollar salaries they were receiving in 2018. The government has promised a roadmap to meet this demand in a way that does not trigger inflation. At the end of last year, timelines were agreed on, and the government has been dragging its feet to convene a meeting they had promised for January. Teachers believe security sector civil servants were quietly awarded cost of living allowances and they were left out. The Apex Council representing the civil servants at salary talks served the government with a notice that they will go on strike if their issues are not addressed. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zenawashi from Harare.
South Africans are facing a cold, dark winter, according to some of the country's leading energy analysts. Electricity blackouts have been disrupting citizens' lives and costing the economy billions of rands since last week. South Africa's energy company, Eskom, has acknowledged its poorly maintained power stations cannot generate the electricity needed to keep the lights on. Darren Taylor reports.
The power outages, sometimes lasting as long as half a day, started in 2008. At the time, Eskom said it needed a couple of years to upgrade stations, so it implemented what it called load shedding, cutting electricity to parts of South Africa when equipment needs to be repaired and when its stations can't keep up with energy demand. During the tenure of former President Jacob Zuma, from 2009 until 2018, load shedding intensified. Energy experts say this happened because Zuma appointed cronies to senior positions at Eskom, and corruption and mismanagement reigned at the corporation.
I've been watching the probabilities of load shedding for more than 12, 13 years. And
independent energy analyst Ted Blom is a former senior manager at Eskom. He says the latest documents on the utility's website show just how bad the situation is.
Lo and behold, I'm even more shocked and flabbergasted when I saw that, because it indicates that the most likely scenario that we face indicates unavailability of about 20,000 megawatts in the grid. That is dire, dire shortfalls.
Blom explains that when Eskom fails to generate 11,000 megawatts, it's forced to implement load shedding in levels. If it declares level 4, for example, this means it turns the lights off for 4 hours at a time. South Africa has been enduring level 2 since last week, but Blom says this is nothing compared with what's to come.
The outlook for level 6 load shedding is pretty certain. And on Eskom's own numbers, if the worst case scenario develops, we're going to certainly hit level 8 load shedding for the end of winter.
Going by this forecast, the country is going to be plagued by long blackouts for at least the next 5 months. Blom says Eskom's in such dire straits, partly because its budget's blown, mostly because it has an excess of 20,000 employees. It won't retrench because it's afraid of a union backlash. Then he says the utility doesn't have enough skilled engineers to complete maintenance and upgrades.
The people at Eskom should be checking this work for quality and standards are not competent. If you can't do the job yourself, then the likelihood of you being able to inspect it for quality is very, very low.
Blom's convinced there's no hope for Eskom.
Man, you're asking somebody to pick himself up by his shoelaces, and I don't know whether that's possible. 2001, Eskom won the World Utility of the Year Award in New York City for being the most reliable, energy available, and cheapest utility. We are now at the other end of the spectrum. We are so broken, nobody's interested.
The only solution, he says, is for the government to allow private energy firms to generate the electricity South Africa needs and to end Eskom's monopoly.
Release the stranglehold on energy generation. Let the private sector get involved. They'll bring the money, they'll do the stuff, and they'll do it less than half the price of what Eskom's killing us with at the moment.
Eskom says its restructuring plan is on track and citizens should be patient. In the meantime, its tariffs rise regularly, with frustrated South Africans sometimes paying for electricity they don't have. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Swuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to PCUSA@... Connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week
right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bongo flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after